Oh, this is gonna be recorded? Wait a minute. I didn't know that. Is there a release form? And no.
If you're awesome.
How is this gonna be used?
As a podcast.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Well, in that case, you have all the rights to use this for in perpetuity for any medium that you could possibly think of in the future.
You're awesome. I love that. When you hit that's another feature of Zoom. Most people don't know that, but this can go out before I introduce you. The agreeing to be recorded is the release form.
So when you hit agree. Right. So I've already agreed anyways, right?
You've agreed.
But
you've
I didn't agreed. Read it.
I know.
Oh, happy Wednesday, diary listeners. It was supposed to be Tuesday, but I had a tech issue, a hardware issue. One of my cords actually broke down, and it's what attaches my microphone to my computer. And whilst you would think that I should have extra of those, I didn't. Now I do. They were quickly shipped to me. It's the good. It's the bad. It's the Amazon. Got it to me. But I'm so happy that I can finally pour out this podcast for you, this diary entry. It's a two-part entry with Gabe Ripley of Tattooed Now. We're calling the first part, What Can Be Given Can Be Taken Away. Enjoy, listeners.
Welcome to the Apprenticeship Diaries, where raw meets refined.
Let's be real, we're still working on refined.
What it took, what it takes, and the stories that are made.
Join us as we learn from professionals about how their stories began.
I mean, did you read it or?
No, it was just simply the whole, you can't record people beyond their consent kind of thing. So
yeah. My guess is that Zoom has the right to use this conversation for however Zoom wants to for in perpetuity for all purposes.
Probably, but, you know, we're pretty wacky people. I don't know if we'd raise any red flags for them. I'm not sure.
I have to go out of my way to not raise red flags.
Well, welcome to, I know, right? Well, I'm very grateful to have you on my show, The Apprenticeship Diaries. And just so everybody knows who I'm talking to, because this will mostly be audio, I'm trying to get to the video medium, and you have such a great setup that it's kind of a crime.
Oh, if we're going to go on, if we're not doing video, eventually I'll hop onto my headphones and take a, you know what? Oh, you already pressed record that. Okay, never mind.
Well, I might use the video, and I'd like to share the video with you as well. But I'm here with Gabe Ripley of Tattoo Now. And hey. And we've known each other for quite a time, man. Like, I think it was before even Paradise that I met you at your shop off the map in, I think it was like 2010.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Time flies. It's out of control.
It's really crazy. It's really, really crazy. But I've adored your family ever since then. I met your daughter and your wife. Cecilia came, and Kim was really like, "Oh no, don't interfere!" Like, and I was giving her like paper to draw on because I love doing that. I don't know if you know, but I really love playing with kids like that. So as soon as she was like into it, I was like, oh, this is so fun. So
that was great. And that first year of the show, they did seminars for the kids, you know, there was actual workshops for the kids. So while the parents were off doing the workshops, the kids could be doing the workshops and kind of being part of the same experience. You know, that was out of control.
I want to do it. Can we bring that back?
We are. Oh, absolutely. You know, this year when I saw a bunch of the clients, Nick Baxter's clients, you know, same clients from fucking 2008, right?
Yeah.
And but now he's back with his four kids.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, it's amazing. And immediately I talked to Cecilia and I was like, you know, next year, you know, babysitting and kids classes again. And she was way down.
I'm down with doing something like that, too. I would love to do that. Wow, that's so cool. And how cool would it be if I got to like butt up with Cecilia and like talk about that? Because that's so cool. She could probably help me a lot because
it'd be wicked fun. It's amazing. Like the next generation, It's just amazing, like how fast everything's going, how fast everybody's brains are going. It's like, you know, technology is helping communication happen faster than like our brains have kind of evolved or our cultures evolved. It's nuts. It's crazy.
It really is. Well, and I wanted to touch with you because I knew you then, but I don't really know about you prior, really. I know that you had created an amazing online portfolio space. Of Tattoo Now. And that kind of set off, I think, tattooing in a way that nobody had really had seen or even recognized before. I really think, because that was what brought me in. That's what brought my mentors into that space. They were like, this is the place to go and talk with artists that are pushing the boundaries of this medium. And I was like, oh, that this is cool. And for me as an art kid, I was like, well, this is great because, you know, it's a critique space. It's like a meeting space, portfolio, online space. So it was really, really, it was great, to say the least.
Agreed. It was fun. You know, it's, I mean, obviously the impact everyone else has to figure out, you know, in my, you know, I just have to keep working is all right. And the kind words, I accept them and I'm happy and I'm thankful for them. But, you know, being in it, it's hard to tell it's not even fair to try to figure out what, you know, the effect of things. Right. But that said, you know, it was one of the first two or three, you know, online resources for tattooing. And, you know, we definitely have a certain flavor, you know, there was, you know, tattooartist.org and tattoodles and tattoos.com and a bunch of others. But, you know, and in part because of my wife's influence and education, you know, education's always been a big part of what sets Tattoo Now or the work that I do or the people I work with apart. And, you know, the spot between technology and tattooing and education and tattooing, you know, and technology, like all of that is, you know, it's still pretty damn new. Right. But, you know, in the mid 90s, again, it was definitely cutting new ground. I used to joke sometimes that we were like reality websites before there was reality TV, you know, reality tattoo TV. So you would check in with Tattoo Now every day to see what the new stuff was going on. And the forum was rocking, right? I mean, we had that was my first experiment in radical free speech or unfiltered free speech. And I rode that for a while until I realized that there are absolutely limits to free speech and there should be. And, you know, while there's an important space for anonymity, as far as like whistleblowing is concerned, I found out pretty, well, not pretty quickly, but, you know, probably eight years into that forum that, if you're not going to attach your name to your harsh words, then there's a disconnect. So there was, you know, there'd be violent threats, you know, anonymous threats. And it's just like, well, that's not, you know, that's not cool.
And, yeah. That is a hard limit that people don't really understand that's not okay to do regardless. And especially, like you said, if you're not going to be ballsy enough to put your name to it.
It gets crazy. No, that said, I had people show up at the shop and stuff too. So it's like, there are, you know,
oh man.
So again, mostly, but again, steering it back to like, so I guess what that is like, we were not trained in how to manage millions of personalities.
Well, right? I think it's valuable for, and that's why I really am excited to have you because, you know, my podcast is a baby venture and I'm very dedicated to doing it slow and growing it slow because I think the more that I do that, the more that I can take these hits as they come than going really fast because, you know, you have these really, and I think in tech world, it is a lot like that because you open up this Pandora's box that you think it's going to be like so amazing. And then it catches like wildfire in ways that the human condition, like you said, you just are like, wow. And we know it. We know that more people, more problems. We know that we are capable of such crazy crap, but you just don't think that it's going to happen. And you just don't think it's going to happen to you.
Like, you know, it's you know, obviously, you know, what the internet can giveth, the internet can taketh away, you know, and, you know, and obviously you could do it in, and I didn't want to go here so quick. Let's go back in time when things were nice.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a shift in the tools, right? Like, and so we're like skipping forward to like, I don't know, 10 years ago when the, you know, in the beginning, you know, in the 90s, computers and the tools, we, you know, human beings use the computers as tools to do awesome things.
Yes.
And, you know, when the social media shift started happening, it's like all of a sudden we became the fucking tool, you know, it's like, or the tool started using us.
Yes.
And so there is a distinct shift. And if so it's really important to be in tune with when you're using technologies, are you using technologies as a tool? Or are you being delivered to the altar of intention, you know, to be sacrificed, and all of a sudden you're doom scrolling forever? But you know, so back in the, you know, but it was awesome I mean, it's still awesome, but you know, in the mid 90s, you know, when I started doing Tattoo Now, it was one of the first websites. Like, websites didn't really exist. I was, you know, programming computers. I was doing mostly touchscreen kiosks, you know, Honda and Epcot Center and all that, and then I would come home and I'd work with my tattooer friends and my musician friends.
So that's where you worked prior, was Honda and Epcot and things like that?
Well, that was like all freelance-y stuff. So like I did contracts for Honda and Epcot Center. I tried to think of myself a little bit as a Robin Hoodie type computer geek. Like, I'll take from the evil corporations and I'll deliver to my musician friends, you know, like, you know, why are they, you know, they're just as talented as these executives that I'm working around. You know, some of the musicians were more so, or the tattooers more so, but they were in the, you know, and the musicians, it's like, it sucks. It's like the economy and the economics of music is insanity. So for me, I'm like, why are these, you know, again, the corporate players who aren't really, you know, they're not that smart, not that much smarter, you know, doing so much better and in charge of these budgets, you know, and the musicians are, you know, slogging it out. So that was, you know, for a while there, I would do freelance gigs and then, you know, work for artists. And then eventually I, you know, just dove in and started working with the artists, had less and less tolerance for, you know, just selling, you know, cars, you know.
Well, you answered one of my first questions, which was, you know, what was it about us that you wanted to partner with?
You know, it's funny when I saw that question come over, you know, my first friend. Oh yeah, wicked weird. I mean, I'm not unweird. You know, I grew up, you know, like, you know, in an awesome, you know, beachside town, but I grew up, you know, white trash, you know, on Section 8, you know, wasn't in the trailer park, but, you know, hung out with everybody from the trailer park. And, you know, the computer, it was weird. Like, my mom's boyfriend had a TI-99-4A. It was Texas Instruments, TI-99-4A.
Oh, wow.
We would plug it into the TV and I have no idea how he got it. He's weird. Like not in a good way, really. But again, so like in the chaos of like that insanity, I would be able to get into the computer and I could type in, you know, 10 print hello world, and then the computer would do that, right? And then I could, you know, program out all the other games, and you know, the games would come in magazines, so I'd flip through the magazines and I'd type out, and I basically programmed the games before I could play them.
Wow.
And it was probably like 10-ish, 11-ish when I started doing that. And then what really got me, to your question about why did I start working with artists, when I went to Catholic school in fifth grade, and I would not recommend it to anybody. And if you send your kid to Catholic school, fuck you. Sorry. Didn't mean to.
You're like, it was harsh.
You know, they taught me that I was going to hell. Right. So it's like, and for me, you know, it gave me an inherent distrust of adults and large groups of people and my peers. But it was definitely rough to go through. But the main point was, like, I was definitely an outcast inside of, you know, I was not a Catholic in a Catholic school. You know, I showed up in fifth grade, you know, so everyone else had been there forever. They knew each other. So I was like the weirdo showed up late. And there was this one kid, John Paul, who had cystic fibrosis. And so he was also you know, not normal. Right. And
He was suffering.
It was rough, you know, and my mom bought drugs from his father or something. But again, so it was like, you know, he was an artist, right? So this kid John, he was sketching, he was drawing all the time. And it was really amazing that knowing he had limited amount of time on the earth, he was still going for it, right? He was still drawing. So he was probably like, he was the first artist that I started working with. And I remember having him draw out, you know, sketches so that I could, you know, I'd have to translate them into the computer as bitmaps. You know, it was, you know, really blocky graphics, but the point was, you know, that was the first time that I'd work with an artist to use their art to put into the computer stuff.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was rough. Like my again, it was a weird, you know, I had a weird upbringing, right? So when he died, my mom didn't even tell me about the funeral, right? Mm-hmm. So it was like all of a sudden on Monday, I go to school and the kids were like, "What the fuck were you? Why weren't you at John Paul's funeral?" I'm like, "That was this weekend." Like, what do you mean that was this weekend?
Oh and, no!
Everything just, you know, again, it was whatever. So, I mean, life is weird.
I suppose. I want to highlight some few things. So I now kind of understand why I see you so well. First of all, my brother is a software engineer. So I grew up with a little you. I wouldn't recommend that either as an older sister. But I love my brother now. He's super dope. He's a really good guy, really good dad. And I do see that we share a very similar brain in a lot of ways. We use the engineer brain in different facets. Mm-hmm. And one of my mom's favorite movies growing up was Alex, Life of a Child, about a kid that had cystic fibrosis. She would watch it. And so I don't think very many people understand what that disease is and how fatal it is. And the fact that you grew up directly with somebody that you cared about a lot and he was a major influence, that's pretty incredible. And that's the thing about art and all of it, creation, is that it comes from I think all of it comes from a lot of pain, you know. So like you have to, if you're going to survive it, you have to transform it. So sure. Yeah. Well,
you know, one of the things, you know, obviously losing friends early, and again, like I said, it was a chaotic upbringing, so it just got weird quick. And but you know, losing a friend in high school, right? It's you know, he died when I was sophomore year in high school. I didn't really talk to him much for that last year either. And we had gone to different schools after Catholic school. And you know, it's definitely like, I think now, I mean, that was 30 some odd, almost 40 years ago, right? And it's like all of that life that I've been able to experience, you know, he hasn't, you know, and and obviously, and since then, there's been plenty of other, unfortunately, you know, people have come and gone. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, I think that the for me, a lot of the motivation is, you know, for my friends and that aren't here anymore, it's like we have to live life for them. You know, that's the only thing we've got.
Well, and it's definitely investing in the gratitude of it too. I've worked with a lot of people who have lost, God forbid, children. And I've always told them, you know, I don't know if this is healing or if it feels okay. I don't have kids, so I don't know. But I do feel like, because I'm very spiritual, I do feel like that they're kind of beings that take on a sacred mission to kind of come in and invoke in us something that drives us beyond what we ever would have imagined before we met them, that they kind of came in knowing what they'd have to bear. And I think that they're kind of like little angels. Yeah. Like the ones that pass early that have to suffer like that.
That's nice. I have a much more naturalistic view of it.
I know, but I think they're meant to plant little seeds in our heart.
Well, and, I mean, I won't deny that. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
This is about you, man.
Yeah. I mean, like certainly, like the magic and the wonder of life, you know, is hopefully, I wouldn't say it's designed to make us acknowledge the miracle that we are actually alive, but it does, you know, certainly. My wife teaches infants, right? So she has a new set of nonverbal infants in her classroom, you know, every year. So she gets to experience the magic of a human being. You know, as their brains are, you know, in the last trimester, the three months after birth is kind of like an extra trimester of development. You know, mm-hmm. the kids are basically developing after they got out of the womb. Our brains are too big.
Yeah, they are. They used to kill their mothers a lot. Like our heads were just too massive.
Sure. No, it's you know, again, science and biology, yes. it's phenomenal. I love it, and the fact that we get to understand or at least get to attempt to understand so much of it. Well, again, that's for me, it's like in the small amount of time that we have here, let's try to figure out as much as we can.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then the arts are obviously a method of communication, right? And so for me, of all of the different types of people that are, you know, that are communicating, that are working around in the world, to be able to help amplify, and ultimately that's what I do, is I'm an amplifier, you know, to help amplify the creatives. You know, it's a pretty sweet spot, right? Especially as a non-creative, like I don't do any art. I don't draw. I don't play music. You know, I don't do creative writing. You know, I probably could.
We'd be nothing without you.
But my skill set's different, right? I mean, as you know, when shit's hitting the fan and world's going crazy, I'm like, why don't I just tattoo fucking hipster shit on people for $300 a pop, right? Like, that's really not. I mean, it's not super trivial or easy, but I probably do have the Guinness Book of World Records for having taken the most amount of tattoo seminars while never tattooing. It's like I probably logged fucking 50 or 60 different, you know, 3-hour long
tattoo. You should contact seminars, them.
I know, is there a record?
I mean, for real, dude. But, like, that's a gap that I don't think the Guinness has really really even understood. You definitely should. And not just, you know, any old tattoo seminars, because that is even getting, I feel like, more and more watered down as time goes on. Everybody's trying to sell their tattoo truths online and at mass. So, you know, you do the seminars that I truly believe are the most impactful, though I don't want to take away from anybody else's hustle.
Some of the most impactful.
Yes, because they're in person and there's touch. And I feel like, I don't know, for me, the things that the reason why I tattoo people is because I love people and I like figuring out how to connect with people better. And like you said, it's a communication tool. So if I'm going to expose myself to a learning environment, I like the classroom. I like being tangibly there. I like touching things with other people. I like seeing it right then and there and emotionally, like feeling the room. Like there's a different energy when you get to experience that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think that they did a recent study about the Zoom and about the different touches that when you communicate, you know, there's obviously there's sight, there's your facial expressions, there's your hand, there's how you hold yourself, you know, there's how you smell, there's how many distractions there are in the room, you know. When you're zooming, so say there's like eight, I don't know these, I'm paraphrasing, say there was like somewhere between 7 and 9 different factors that went into the level of communication. Through the Zoom, there was like 2 or 3. Right. It's like we could see you in this spot. You're flat, you know, hear you, you know, depending, you know, Zoom's doing a great job. I was just saying, you know, Zoom does a great job of filtering. But here's the thing, right? Zoom filters out all of the audio of the environment. But we will often use the environment as audio cues about what the hell's going on or where you're at. So, but the main point being is when you're in the room with like 20 people and there's real energy going in, there's all 9 of those pathways of information that are flowing through and sensory things going through. There is just more. It is richer.
Yes.
Now that said, you know, obviously I make my living or I try to make my living, you know, using the computers to connect people. Right.
Right.
Which gives us the ability to connect with people all around the world at a time when we couldn't have this conversation if it wasn't for the computers. Like, I mean, we could, but we couldn't have it at our convenience.
Right.
And so for me, a lot of what I do, and even back in the day with Tattoo Net, starting from the beginning, it's using the digital to attract people online to communicate and to kind of create this online digital introductions and relationships. But then really bringing everybody into person, right? So then, you know, and it was like that in the very beginning with the tattoo. Like, so Darkside was the first website that I did. And this is in the mid-90s. And again, this is like websites came out and I was programming video games and touchscreen kiosks. And I was like, pictures and words, like, it's kind of neat that everybody could publish, but like making video games and shit. I don't, you know, I'm making, you know, full screen videos and you can't do that on the web. But I wanted to get better tattoos. Right. So I started trading out for tattoos for web work and realized really quickly, it's like people see the pictures online and then read the words. Right. And so that's where like Baxter, like right from the very beginning, he had his like manifestos on his pictures. He's like, this is about animal rights and this is about, you know, equality or whatever it was. And But people could just see the pictures and be like, oh, that's a fucking sick ass tattoo. And then they can read the words and be like, I identify with that.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they're there in person. Right. Yep. They've driven 2 or 3 hours to get a full sleeve about animal rights or whatever. And or about Nick's interpretation of animal rights, even better. Right. But then you meet in person. Right. And so then all of a sudden, like, there's people that would come to the shop and they'd be like, oh, I saw that tattoo online, or I saw that. And really, it's that dance or that pass back and forth between the virtual world and then the real world. And then everybody sees you, especially like with the gatherings or with any sort of, like, you know, or a party at a shop, you see each other in real life. Then when you're connecting over the computer again, it's a whole new world, a whole new another level. Is. And so maybe we only have our 3 points of senses, but now we have all that history and we've got, again, a sense of shared history or some experiences and whatnot.
Absolutely. Like you said, you try to stick to it as a tool and you don't let it, you know, it's the same with stuff. It's the same with things that you own. You got to be careful because eventually it can end up owning you.
Yeah. Sure. Now the big difference is, right, or one of the differences is, like, yeah, for sure. The getting sucked into it is not unique to social media, but what is unique to it is that there's computer scientists. Like, your hammer is not designed to get you addicted to it. Right. You know?
Yeah.
Sure. Your TV kind of is, but your TV is also not interactive. Right. So, like, all of a sudden now we're in this interactive world where I'm a computer geek, right? I listen to these motherfuckers, like, that. Their goal is to keep us sucked in to using it. Right. And so that part is a little bit different. Right. So it's like, And I think what happens is the scientists are tapping into our natural tendencies to do that. And they're exploiting it to a tremendous effect. So.
Well, and that's why I encourage anybody, I like you said, the beginning of my story was a lot of emotional pain, physical pain, things like that, that I had to figure out and survive. And there was a lot of therapy, lots of self-help books are on my shelf, along with a lot of psychology. And I love it. Honestly, it's hard for me to not respect it on some level, because I do have that very engineer brain of just being like, oh, you know, we're very programmable. We have these natural things that you can actually. And, you know, what's sad is that people, you know, when you're feeling something, you are uniquely feeling it. So it's hard for you to think, wow, I'm feeling something that if people that can be very utilized in a nefarious way that, can target me. But it's so, you know, you think like, oh, how could anybody do that? You know,
it's the fucked up part. Like, you know, and this is, I mean, these are all just choices that we're making, right? Like, it's just as easy to program, maybe not just as easy, but it's not that much more difficult. And it could be just as easy to program the algorithms to help supply us with content that's healthy, that helps us feel better about ourselves, not feel worse about ourselves, that helps us compete in a healthy way, not compete in a toxic way. Like, it doesn't make as much money, perhaps, but I don't know. They haven't really even tested it out yet, right? Like, they're just taking the lazy route, which is like, attention means money. And what, you know, again, the computer doesn't give a shit what.
I mean, I'm taking that route. I'm grateful for all of them. I think they're very dedicated fans. But I only have a handful of people that really, because I'm very determined to grow this slow and integral. And I love that grassroots, you know, by ear. It makes me have to meet people, like you said, like, go beyond the computer, meet them in person, have an exchange, draw them into a space where we both can exchange on a very integral level. And I want to bring it back, you know, like, I've had a lot of people be like, why don't you sell ads? Why don't you do TikTok? Why don't you, you know, do these clips? And I'm like, because I do long form conversational podcasts that are about meeting people.
Right.
If you're attracted to those things, you're not my audience.
Yeah. You know, I can't agree more. you know, again, I've gone through audiences, you know, sometimes the audience is in millions, sometimes it's in tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands, sometimes it's just thousands. Like, again, as you know, there's like a core group of a couple thousand, and that's all you really need, you know? Mm-hmm. And obviously we've watched a half a dozen other tattoo podcasts or YouTube shows blow up and explode. And then, you know, I think, you know, there is definitely, I mean, and it happens in the tattoo world also. It's just another effect of how it happens in the tattoo world. Younger tattooer, 22 years old, all of a sudden wicked talented, makes $1,500 a day, not mature enough to be able to speak to 100,000 followers.
Correct.
And I've done the same thing. I have also been in a position of responsibility that was greater than the skill level that I had to communicate at. So I'm not like, you know, throwing stones at glass houses or anything. I acknowledge it because I've been through it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I guess we've watched rock and roll stars. I mean, like all sorts of fame will blow people
Justin
up.
Justin Bieber.
And, you know, however it is. Like, who's that? Is he a golfer?
Right.
But, you know, it's tough. Like I said, it's almost, and there's almost no way to teach people ahead of time. You know, one of the themes that came up a couple of times at the gathering last was, you know, a bunch of the tattooers were talking about how they used to be assholes or used to be full of themselves. Or again, it's like that 3-year to 6-year mark often will a tattooer just all of a sudden they are enabled for the first time in their life, possibly. Right. And it's real easy to let that get to your head and to think it's about you. Right.
Right.
And I'm the one that's doing these tattoos. I'm making $1,500 a day. You know, people are flocking to me. You know, I can go anywhere in the world and actually be busy. But you know, ultimately it's not right. And again, you know, it's, you know, and again, the tattoo gathering's not about me. Off the Map wasn't about me. Like Tattoo Now, I mean, it kind of is just because of there's other computer geeks, right?
Right.
Like, again, we're really just conduits. And, right. You know, it's, I guess ultimately that's one of the things I was hoping that would come out a little bit more. And there might even need to be a workshop or discussion panel, like I'm not, you know, how to avoid being the asshole that you're probably becoming, you know, or something like right. that. And again, I don't know, maybe we can't, maybe we all have to go through the learning process of thinking that we're the best thing and then getting our ass kicked and then, you know, coming back and being like, okay, you know, I'm humble enough to keep asking or whatever.
But, yeah. I do think there's truth to the humility that needs to happen. I think that's a classic thing. I know that it's not a fan thing, but you know, it's like the story of the Tower of Babel. You know, humanity tried to build this huge thing to, you know, be above God. And then, you know, it was leveled and we were parceled out again. You know, I think
the part that I love about that story. I mean, and I'm definitely, like I said, I read most of the Bible and I've got very strong opinions about a lot of it. For the Tower of Babel, like what I really take away from that is two things. One is if we could just talk to each other, we fucking get the shit down, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's a language barrier in between humanity. And then the other part is like, man, if there was a God, wouldn't he want us to all get along and talk in the same language? Like, you know, come on now. For me,
maybe that, not like, in this life though. You know what I'm saying? Like,
this is the life we got.
Well, I know.
Uh-oh, are we gonna go there?
And well, yeah, but you like video games, so I like to see it as that. You know,
I don't particularly. I used to like video games. I haven't played video games in.
We're just stuck in a simulation with a certain set of attributes that would sound
fantastic and awesome, but it's a little bit too complicated. It feels to be natural or to be, you know. To be in the natural world. I mean, for me, this is the experience, right? So one of the frustrations that I have with anybody who will try to influence me by using an afterlife or something that happens after death as a, or almost as anything, it's like, you know, it's this for me is either heaven or hell, depending on the experience that we have. And so to co-opt that somebody's sense of that for an afterlife or to try to displace it. I really hope on my way out, my last thought will be, I hope I'm wrong about this. I can't wait to be wrong about this. You know, if I'm wrong about one thing, let it be this.
Well, you know, I agree. That's a, you know, that would be a frustration. I think that all I mean is that I think that for us to keep cultivating hope, there needs to be meaning, and there needs to be that. Now, whether we make it up or not, which we probably do, yeah. I do think that it keeps us from being fatalistic.
You know, I get, you know, I read, again, as we, you know, as we're talking about, I have a 20-year-old daughter, right? So, and she's going into philosophy. And of the videos I was listening to recently, there was one on optimistic nihilism, right? So mm-hmm. nihilism being, we are all just
Gillian
going to
Boone
turn into
just
dust.
Gave and, me this. I was like,
did he?
Okay.
Awesome.
Yeah.
You know? And so it's like, you know.
So well, at least you're optimistic.
You know, if you, but and the thing is, if you acknowledge that, I mean, and I guess, again, the scientist in me is like, I just don't know how we can't, you know, acknowledge the fact that the universe is going to run out of fuel, you know, someday, right? And this is all for naught. But to use that, again, not to use that to be depressive and to be like, whatever, to use it as like, that means that this bullshit that's in front of me right now is meaningless, right? Like the drama that's going on the internet about Tattoo Gate or whatever the fuck, like all of that literally is meaningless too, right? And so
well, if that brings you peace, if that brings you peace, the thing of it is that seems to bring you peace. That seems to allow you to keep going.
Just to be clear, I'm not sure I am an optimist nihilist. I don't, you know, no. I'm just talking about the concept of if somebody doesn't have meaning to life, does that mean, what does that mean? And and again, like I guess, yeah, we could get into, you know, all of the hitching, like, you know, is a false meaning to life that makes your life better any better than, you know, but if it's a false belief that makes your life better, how does that reconcile? Right. I'm not, you know, I guess those are all philosophical questions above my pay grade though.
But you partner with people that I think are very bound to that seeking, at least.
Oh, yeah.
I think any artist who denies that is probably lying to themselves. You know, we self-soothe by our craft, and everything is about, you know, perpetuating a sense of meaning and hope for us, because otherwise why would we do it? Why would your friend who had cystic fibrosis, why did he draw?
Yeah, so him, that was a long time ago. I don't know.
You know,
but there's my only reply to that is there's a wide variety of artists, right? They do it for a wide variety of reasons, right? So like, I'm always a little bit remiss to say that, you know, artists are like this or artists are like that, or artists, you know, have a deeper sense
That's
of this.
Wise.
Because, you know, I know a lot of artists, and not all of them are deep, you know, and you know, some artists get into it specifically for the superficiality of it, you know. Which is okay, I guess, you know, I mean, it is okay.
Well, yeah and no, because I've met a lot of people, I've talked to a lot of people, and, you know, it's as deep as the person will let you dig. Honestly, a lot of people, have a lot of depth that they never show and that they won't show. And it's because they are, really trying to keep themselves from being seen in that way. And it's very intentional. I've met a lot of people like that. So they, sure, they put on this very, very fortified facade, that if you do meet with them, and I, you know, I've met with a lot of people, and when you inflict pain on people, it tends to crack them a little bit more than they're comfortable with.
You can
feel, and you can get certain things, and I try to use my powers for good and not evil. But I've found that most people are a lot deeper than what they're really comfortable in sharing, even with podcasting, like, you know, contacting people and then just being like, hey, you know, do you want to be on a podcast? They want to, but then they're like, oh my God, I'm going to be seen, and like, oh, I don't know what to do. And they get really like, and I'm like, dude, don't worry about it. First of all, it's just going to be you and me. It's recorded. If if you want to cut certain things out, I try to keep it raw and honest, but if there's something that comes out that you don't like, we'll cut it out. It's not a big deal. And then, and I'm like, I don't have a huge audience. Who's going to see you?
That is, you know, yeah, for sure. I love that part. It's like,
icebreaker. You
know, it's a, I mean, I've been part of a significant amount of people like hopping on the cameras and doing this stuff, you know,
yeah.
Some of them before they go on the real TV. And then, you know, I'm always really nervous once they come back after, you know, they've been on the Ink Masters like three times or whatever. And then they're coming out of our dinky little, you know, do it yourself podcast shows or whatever. And it's like, but you know, none of us are, I mean, not none of us are like, we didn't get into it to become actors, you know,
maybe
got a strike, I suppose if we were, but you know, the point is like, we are just regular people. No one should be comfortable, you know, in front of the camera, like exposing themselves. It's like, it's not a natural thing.
No, and, it's not. It's not. But I like to, and that's why, you know, I try to make the show as like very, you know, as much as can be favorable to those things. Like, let people understand that, like, this is the beginning, because, you know, of course, apprenticeship and all that stuff is like, you got to start somewhere, and you have to get uncomfortable first, and you have to, you know, go into this unknown that, you know, and like you, I've always loved you and your family, because as you said, your wife likes to deal with people who are very still developing, and those very fresh, like, you know, 3 months out of the womb. Your daughter loves to teach. Education has always been the forefront. And I, you know, I do view you as very optimistic. I think I mean, you're about developing systems that I think are to, like you said, amplify. And that has to come from a place of just sincere love and joy and, like, you know, wanting to see people be as big and awesome as they can be. Yeah, so
is it, I don't know. Like,
I don't know. You tell me, but yeah, that's what I see.
I think, you know, I mean, I'm happy that's the effect, and that is the effect I go for. Right. I'm like my motivation though, isn't necessary to like help you become the best person you could be. No offense. I mean, I hope you can be like, but I'm not like, I don't stay
up late.
You
gotta feed your family. I know.
Well, yeah, I gotta feed, but even that, like, I'm not, I mean, I my wife probably wishes I thought about that a little bit more, but for me, it's like, it's just the effect, you know, or, you know,
it's what you love. It's what you geek out about.
Yeah, that's kind of
you have geek on your hand right now.
Oh yeah, bird, you know, I'm not an ornithologist, but I do like birds, and I am a geek. You know, but it's weird because it's like it's I'm looking for the effect, or but not because mostly because I can. I guess I don't. Again, I'm here for a very short amount of time, and the skill set that I have, you know, allows me to take a peek at the ingredients, if you will, you know, an artist and where they are and what they're about and where they can go, where they could be. And I could definitely see, like, oh, I, you know, it's almost impossible for me not to be like, oh, you know what you can do? Like, it's just like unsolicited critique and feedback about what I think you could possibly do. Right.
Well, I think that's earnest.
And I can't admit that. But part, it's weird. Like, it's not like I'm like looking at you. I'm like, I really care about you, Amy, and I can connect all these dots so that you could be the best that you can be. It's
no,
really
I know
just
that.
Like, I mean, and again, I do think that, but that's not what my motivation is. My motivation really is, I don't even know. Like I said, mostly it's just, I know I could see the things and I'd like to put them together. And then some people dig it and some people don't. And sometimes it's very difficult and complex to put something together that I'm looking at. And sometimes it's a little bit
as simpler. An artist, I get it. it's the same thing. It's the same exact thing. And it is a very, I mean, I don't know if I'm on some spectrum, but it is kind of like an emotional disconnect from a place that, you know, not a lot of people have, where you're kind of seeing people as more numbers and, you know, points on a screen than you are actually them. And you got to really vacillate between the two when you work, you know, that way.
Yeah, for sure. There was a business solopreneur podcast that I was listening to where the fella had worked for, you know, with 300 people or whatever. And then he was down. He's like, I'm not a solopreneur. I have one employee. And the guy's like, look, you had fucking 300 of them. Now you have one. You're a solopreneur. Yeah. But You know, and he was talking about how, like, he loves people. So, like, when he would, when people, like, he would say yes to people, right? So when he was in charge, it was not a very good manager because he just have to say yes. And he's like, and to be the business person, you need to think of them as numbers and whatnot. And it's weird because it's like, I'm not sure I'm there. I mean, obviously I'm very computery, you know, and my emotional intelligence is, you know, learned very late in life, you know, so there's probably plenty of people that are like, fuck you, you treated me like a number, you know, but I don't know. Like, again, I like, you know, I really dig, you know, where, let's see, like, so Rember is really clear, you know, as a shop owner, how he like treats he meets everybody with where they're at. Mm-hmm. Right. And which is crazy, 'cause he's got like 20, 25 yeah. people in his space. You know, and I did try to, and maybe it came a little bit later, but again, it's like, it's not like the reason why I don't just say, yeah, I treat people as numbers. Like, I'm not fitting anybody into a plan. Right. So I'm not like right. coming out of here and fitting you into a plan, or I'm not fitting, right. you know, Guy into a plan, or Nick, or anybody, or Vaughn, or whatever. I'm not like there's no plan. No. And so it's not like when I'm looking at somebody, I'm like, oh, I know how I could, you know, fit you and make those numbers into this numbers and make it all work. It really is just more like, you know, the other day Ivana, you know, moved back mm-hmm. into Los Angeles, and she's like,
oh, did she?
You know, which is, yeah, yeah.
Oh, right on. And, she has the best eyes.
She's great. She's
her awesome. Eyes are so fucking gorgeous.
Sorry. Yeah. No worries. And yeah. So I woke up in the middle of the night thinking she could market to weddings mm-hmm. and she could, like, she's been doing, like, translating the kids' art into tattoos. So she could, like, throw parties where the kids, drawing parties for the kids.
Yeah.
And then book appointments for the parents.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I can't believe I'm dreaming. I literally woke up at 1 o'clock in the morning and I'm like, I have to fucking text so I don't forget these ideas. Right. And I don't know. And again, like, so for me, it's like that she's not a number. Like, I'm not, like, there's a real creative energy yeah. there that I'm trying to figure yeah. out, you know, just how to connect with numbers, how to connect with clients that pay money. But like,
you feel like, to me, and I identify with this a lot, kind of like a creative cheerleader.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, for sure. And again, I like that. Well, you know, cheerleader is almost the right word, you know, coach is definitely not the right word.
Well, coach suggests a little bit more of a plan.
Yeah, and it's very athletic. I hate sports, so.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I mean, I don't really, my niece is becoming a cheerleader, and it's been a lot for me to, like, kind of grapple with that, but I've never been physically fit enough to even go in that space. So I think that's part of my aversion to it. I'm super proud of her and super excited for her, but, like, the cheerleader vibe is, like, really.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I'm happy for her. I mean, she's eight, so it's awesome. I think that she's incredible that way. And I can't wait to see what she does with it. She's a really good soul. But yeah, there's a, like, a really
sure. But, you know, that's obviously people take a peek at our choices and
yeah.
say the same thing.
I'm a mess.
But it's
I have no
culture,
right.
You know, I mean, cultural, I mean, I guess to tattoos, it's amazing how you know, clearly when we were getting into tattoos, it was way more, it was counterculture.
Yes.
And now it's like cool culture.
Yes. And,
the shift from that is, I mean, I love it. You know, I mean, I you know, for me, tattooing empowers people to become who they want to be, or often does, or has the ability to, you know, so for me, the ability for, you know, if half of America could actually use tattooing to actualize who they really want to become and become that person, you know, again, I had a story at one point where, you know, tattooing as a cultural Trojan horse, right? Hmm. So it's like, it's this, you know, anti-establishment art, you know, and really it's a self-empowering art, right? I mean, you yes. know, you put yes. Either a symbol on somebody of something that they want to be, then they're looking at it every day and they want it, they you know, they're going to become it. And or an anchor to a memory of the past or a person of the past, you know, tattooing, I mean, it helps people become better people.
Yes.
And and so for me, it's like, oh man, it's amazing. It's like the everyone thinks that TV is ruining tattooing, right? TV is ruining tattooing. And I'm not saying it's not doing crazy things and some of it's not damaging. But if all of a sudden the mainstream culture of America and the greater world, speaking of America here, you know, is now finding it more acceptable to get tattooed. So then all of a sudden they're engaging in this art that can help them become better people and who they want to be. In my science fiction story in my head, I'm like, wow, tattooing is the art that helps bring about world peace or whatever. I don't know, maybe not world peace, but, you know, it helps bring about a change in a sea change in people's mentalities about their lives, right? About how the decisions that they make now will affect them now and on their deathbed. They're still going to be looking at, you know, their ex-husband's name on their arm or whatever it might be on their deathbed. But the, you know, the act of the tattooing, it changes people's lives. Give me one second. I need to fill my tea.
Yeah, to go for it. Yeah. Well, you probably can't. I know. Gabe, you're awesome.
The downsides to having headphones is I can't fill up my tea in here.
Well, I was just going to say, I love that too. I was going to say that I don't think that I'm, how do I want to phrase this? That is a hope. At the end of the closing panel at Paradise, Fawn was up there, Nick was up there, and the question arose, like, what do you think the future of tattooing is? And I really love the answer you just gave, because if I were to highlight something that I hope tattooing can be, and it's you know, unlike any other art where and I saw it right away because I wanted to do my art for a living, but I saw that in order for me to do that and actually make money, I would have to either parcel myself out to a corporation and be heavily controlled and heavily kitsch and have almost all of my art watered down to a point of where it wasn't even art anymore. It was just like we were talking about clickbait advertising that's meant to sell people shit. So what I saw in tattooing was, I went to school for illustration, and a lot of kids that went to school for illustration, I think, have found their hearts in tattooing, because what we get to do is take that seed concept from our client and then run with that and create a brand for that person specifically. And while we do it, and this is something that I try to very much so do, I try to educate people about art, because when you do that, you open up the artist in someone else. You open up their creativity, something that has been taken from them through, like you said, like going to certain schools, going to certain programs, like, oh, we gotta live and work and, you know, 9 to 5 it. And like, you know, like we have to do this soul crushing life that doesn't give us any kind of joy. And there's something that gets amplified and turned up. Like I said, my ability to crack through people through this borderline like torture method, that's what tattooing really is able to, you can either seed in somebody something that's kind of bad and kind of traumatic, which, you know, some tattoo artists I think do, whether they mean to or not.
Sure.
Or you can turn them up and you can open up something in them that's really incredible. And I do think that the people who gather at Paradise are those kind of people who aim to be that kind of artist.
Sure. And I think you don't get out to Paradise by accident, right? It's in the middle of fucking nowhere, and it's nerdy, and everyone's like, well, can you actually tattoo anybody in a ski resort? Like, is there anybody going to be there? Or, you know,
right?
no, you know, and like, and all tattooing doesn't have to be about that either, right? There's definitely a place to walk in and get a little, although, you know, you walk in and get a little touristy banger, you know, tattoo though. And this, you know, the same forces are at work, right? If the tattooer is an asshole, then all of a sudden you're thinking that person's an asshole for the rest, you know, the time that you're looking at that little banger tattoo. You know, if that tattooer is like, you know, on the, you know, again, on a path of helping you enlighten yourself, even though it's just a little banger, they might introduce something or a concept or say something that, again, you're going to remember for the rest. Oh, you know, I remember the first time that I thought about it that way, you know, or whatever it is. And, you know, I guess I just waffled back and forth. I'm like, not all tattooing has to be about that life change, except for it is always about it, whether you acknowledge it or not.
Well, I think it's just because you recognize that you're not trying to be an authority in someone's life. You're just trying to give them a few helpful, you know, suggestions. Take it or leave it, man.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, which I get.
Yeah. I was watching a video, I guess I was on YouTube, and there's a woman, she's tattooing now, I think, or she's apprenticing, and it's all about like the kitschy kind of, you know, YouTube stuff. And somebody, you know, there was a pretty famous tattooer lady who was talking about not tattooing people's hands or necks. Mm-hmm. And so like the premise of the YouTube is like, are they gatekeeping? You know, they're gatekeeping. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the younger woman was doing a great job of explaining. She's like, well, all the older tattooers had to go through shit and this and that, and they would never tattoo necks or hands. And so that's like the old way of doing it. But now no one gives a fuck if you have your hands tattooed. So it's like, you know, they're just old, really. And but so it was almost like you could, you know, excuse their old ways of, you know, being weird because when they had to get their neck tattooed, right, they had gotten a lot of I forgot where the point I was going with this, but I was listening to that video. They were talking about gatekeeping and
we were just talking about, like, you know, how people get to paradise, what their interactions with the public is, and how to open up people. And I think you were getting to the point of, like, you know, our professional responsibility, and the fact that you, like you said, you're just trying to not be an authority. You're just trying to give people suggestions about,
Right. So then that made me think of when they were talking about not getting your hands tattooed or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was probably 15 years. I don't know, whatever. It was 2009, I think. And because there was a particular tattooer, and she was, you know, somebody, a client had come in and wanted a tattoo on their hand or their neck or something. And the tattooer was giving them a lecture about, you know, jobs and this or that. And I'm just like, they're a fucking scientist. They came in, they said they're a scientist you're like a 23-year-old tattooer who barely could keep their own shit together. Like, I know what happens when you walk out of this door and you're a wreck. and you're trying to give like advice to a 45-year-old scientist?
Yeah.
You know?
You need to know your crowd.
That tattooer still does tattoos on people that they're going to remember for the rest of their life, right?
Right.
And so it's, and this is where I was going before. It's like, even though we get the responsibility, it's not like anybody's like, oh, here's the responsibility and the handbook on how to fucking use it appropriately.
Correct.
And again, even if, you know, if you're 22 years old, even if you read the book, you're not necessarily going to understand it because you're only 22. Right. And it's really tremendous, the amount of energy that tattooing, I mean, it's one of the most beautiful things. It's like, and the barrier to entry is so low, and the heights that you could reach are,
I mean, endless.
There's it's a limit. Endless. There's a natural limit. I wanted to say endless or limitless. There's a natural limit. Like, you can't make more, you know, you can't be, you know, more famous than the most famous person in the world, right? But if you want to be, you could be. You know, tattooing really is. And so, that, again, that enabling nature of tattooing, that we talked about it before, you know, the power that enables the client to become who they want to be in mass allows the tattooers to become exactly who they want to be.
Yes.
And, you know, if you want to be a raging fucking maniac asshole, you can. You know, you might not make $2,000 a day. You might only make $1,000. You might not be booked out a year. You might only be booked out 6 months. But if you're talented, you can be, right?
Yeah.
And so the real trick, not the trick, but the people that, the hardest thing that I found is like people, and it's just like this, like you have to figure out who you are and get all of that toxic shit out of you before you scale yourself or before you get scaled. And, you know, again, that's part of, you know, either if you don't get it out before you scale. And again, like, I would, you know, think about this with my tattoo shop. I'd probably gotten it about 70, 80% right. you know, and when I was at 80%, right, I'm like, good enough for me. I'm a fucking B plus student. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
But like when I scaled it, all of a sudden I had, you know, when I was up, you know, when I went up 200, 300, 400%, that 10% or 15% that wasn't right, got scaled
too.
Right. Like, oh shit. You know, what was, you know, if I had one complaint out of 10, gives a fuck. One complaint out of 10. We're the best tattoo shop. Not the best tattoo shop in the world. We're one of the best tattoo shops in the world. One out of 10, who gives a fuck? All of a sudden, there's 1,000 people and there's 100 complaints.
Yeah. Like,
oh, shit. Wait a minute. Now I've got 100 people talking to each other, you know?
Yes. And that's, that amplifies really quickly.
But it was like, but it's only 10%. It's not, you know? And, and the same thing will happen. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, no, no. It's your show, but I was just going to intercede in that. Like, so I grew up in a small business family. And one of the things that I did first before I cut hair for a living and then ultimately tattooed was I ran the front end of my dad's salon. Mm-hmm. And he sent me to seminars to be a good front end person.
Awesome.
One of the things, I know, right? It's amazing. I mean, there's seminars for everything, but one of the things that you learn was that that part is so integral, because when people leave and they're dissatisfied, that is like a wildfire that will catch to so many more people than you think, because people, when they're satisfied, very rarely, you know, go out of their way to talk about it. They'll just come back. But the problem is when they're not satisfied, they won't come back, and they'll tell endless people, at least 10 people, about how dissatisfied. And now that we have the internet where you can go
amazing
and just have that be rampant, and you can have campaigns of people who, like you said, about the anonymous ratings and reviews. I almost feel like, like you said about the, if we use these tools to the benefit of human society, I think one of the things that I would suggest is, like, you don't get to leave a 1 or 2 star review without writing, or 1 or 2 star rating without writing a review.
Yeah. You know, for me, and I'm a, you know, whatever, I'm 49, almost 50. Right. So mm-hmm. the other day I'm walking down the bike path and I fucking got a pre-roll from the dispensary, and I'm mm-hmm. spark it up, and I fucking, all of a sudden I look and the whole fucking thing falls right out on the fucking sidewalk. And like, I knew it was my fault, because I bought the fucking pre-roll from a dispensary. I knew it wasn't the best quality thing that I could have done or whatever.
You were eager.
You know, but I was on my walk. I wanted to, I immediately was like, I'm going to get on the fucking Facebook and be like, these motherfuckers sold me a. And then I'm like, wait. You're supposed to talk to the person you have a problem with first.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like, I can't believe I fell for it. Like, I got my ass kicked because people didn't follow those rules, right?
Yeah.
And it was like, even that's me. That's my, like, I wanted to go straight to the internet. I want to go straight and bitch about it to all my friends and family so that they can know that that fucking dispensary sold a bad fucking pre-roll. I was like, right? No, that is exactly the wrong thing to do. That's not like you're supposed to go to the store and be like, can you please replace my faulty product? And that's so simple, right? Like, but now how did we lose that? Or how did I lose that? I mean, we lost, you know, there's a spot that
Okay, that wraps part one. I know it was just getting good. But as you can tell, you know, whatever you gain, just understand that the higher you go, the farther you can fall. And Gabe is really you know, just, he's such a good person to reference for all of this, because he's been through most of it. And just, I honestly think that, I don't know, just such a good guy at the end of all of that. Even still, a lot of stuff happened to him. And I'm mad for him in a lot of ways, because I guess when it comes down to everything, what's supposed to happen happens, and it's all meant for us to learn from and grow from. And I guess that's the take home. And I know that that's got to be the take home that you really couch on by the end of the day, when you've risen that high. I mean, at least you've felt a lot, and you've experienced a lot in such a short amount of time. And that's something that Gabe can really can really say for himself. I'm just so grateful that he's a friend of mine, and he's always there to really influence me, and he's always given me so much access to awesomeness. He surrounds himself with awesomeness. So thank you, Gabe, for this part one. Next week we'll have part two. Please join us back because Gabe has more to share. We're going to get into a lot of fun AI talk, which should be pretty cool. Thank you, listeners. I really appreciate your patience. This podcast is coming out late, so I really thank you for hanging in there and waiting for me to get my hardware issues under control. God bless you and have a powerful week.
Thanks for listening. You can find The Apprenticeship Diaries on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our IG is the_apprenticeship_diaries. If you would like to offer constructive criticism or an interview, drop us an email at theapprenticeshipdiaries@gmail.com. We look forward to hearing from our listeners.